Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and today we're going to be talking about the past. We're going to be talking about the real life experience of a man who relates his story of life when he was a small child during World War II. The title of his publication is How Warm It Was and How Far. My guest is Dr. Robert Kahn. Dr. Kahn, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm glad to be there.
Well, I'll tell you what. I was absolutely intrigued when I found out a couple of facts about you. One, you're a retired orthopedic surgeon.
Yes.
You have a PhD in chemistry from the University of Michigan and an MD in orthopedics from Case as well as Yale University.
Yes.
You're a man that is so accomplished in the arena of medicine. I'd like to ask you a personal question. Did you, in your wildest dreams as a child, envision that this is what you were going to be doing as a professional?
I certainly did not. I had my eyes wide open when I left Holland for America, but I had no idea what the future would bring.
Your story is a story of your childhood. And
yes.
It really starts off with the year 1940 in the early
That's
hours
right.
of
At the
May
start
the 10th.
Of World War II when I was 5 years old.
Mm-hmm. 5 years old. Now, that ability to remember with that kind of detail, I think is just incredible because so many of us, as we get older, it's like the unpleasant stuff, you really just go, oh, we'll put that in the burp mold, and every once in a while maybe we'll let a little bit of it come up and gain some air, but most people's memories are not that acute. Why do you think that you have such a vivid recollection of the childhood?
I'm blessed with a very good memory for details of my childhood. I can remember everything as we sit here, and I guess it was a rather eventful childhood, and that made a big imprint on my mind.
Well, I was just amazed because you said on May 10th, in the early morning hours, there was all kinds of commotion. What was going on that significant day?
Well, there were explosions going on. We weren't even at home. We were on vacation in The Hague. And there were explosions going on, and everybody was running around, and they were taping the windows with glue tapes to prevent them from shattering if there were explosions. And there were a few soldiers on the roof around us, and I had no idea what was going on. And my mother said, well, we are at war with Germany. And that was the beginning of the war. My mother was alone. My father was still working. He was staying at home in Arnhem, which is near the border with Germany, and we were worried about what was happening to him. But after a few days, things kind of died down, and my mother decided to go shopping. And she took a shopping in The Hague by streetcar, and very soon we were stopped by the air raid sirens, and we were spending the rest of the afternoon in various air raid shelters because that was the day that the Germans bombed the entire city of Rotterdam. They killed, I think, 40,000 people during that afternoon. And Rotterdam is only about 25 miles away from The Hague, so we felt the vibrations, and when we got out of there, we saw the smoke. And later on, of course, we realized what had happened. That was the beginning of the war.
Well, that, when you think of those details, and that you were 5 years old and you remember all of these details so succinctly, to me is a real statement of the impact that war has on the psyche. I don't care where you are. I've interviewed other people that have gone through situations of war at different times, and it does burn into your memory.
This is true,
because
yes.
It is not, it is something that you know your world is changing. You have absolutely no control over any of this. So
no, that is very true.
I should mention
to you that there are a number of reasons why I wrote the book. One was that I felt that the details are historical and they should be worth telling.
Mm-hmm.
Number two is I wanted to point out that the post-war years for these Holocaust survivors was not all that fancy and
mm-hmm.
not pretty, and mine was terrible because I was raised by very uncaring family members, and I had an accident also, losing a leg under a streetcar. And I was therefore very much poised to leave Holland, leave everybody behind, and go to America.
Well, let's go back to the earlier time, though, because what you've said is very significant, and we'll want to talk about that. But I had to chuckle because of your honesty about being a little boy and how whenever you got under stress, you always had to run to the bathroom. I mean, that was just the way it was. And you had a bladder that didn't have much of an extension program when it came to time frames. And I just have to chuckle because you're giving this story of a child. And so many times we hear stories about people as adults having gone through this. And this was a very, very ugly time. But I want to ask you a question about Holland. The Germans were advancing, they were coming in, and you mentioned air raid shelters. How much of the preparation for being invaded as an adult was there done in Holland? Was there very much opportunity for that?
No, there was not, because the Dutch had been neutral during the First World War, and they were fully expecting to be neutral again during the Second World War. And it was only the surprise attack by the Nazi Germany that threw all of those plans overboard.
Mm-hmm.
And they initially thought they were going to resist, but of course the small Dutch army didn't have any reason to think that they were going to be successful in that, and they weren't, of course. And in a few days, they surrendered, and the Queen left on a submarine for England.
Mm-hmm. And everyone that had no means of getting out had to endure what followed. Now,
that's
your
correct.
Mother was a very, very strong woman, not physically, but emotionally, and had a determination that you and as much as could be protected and your sister, your family, they had to be sheltered. Tell us what happened to your father, because he was not in the picture, and tell us.
Well, my father was a manufacturer. He and his brother had a rubber factory in Arnhem, and had started the factory with old machines from Germany during the Depression, and he was quite successful. When the Jews started to be rounded up and they had to wear stars and things like that, my father went on working for a while, but there was a little suitcase behind the front door with the words, "Don't ever touch them because someone may come and get them." And one of my cousins happened to work for my father, and he was a 21-year-old, very, very nice, popular guy, and he was suddenly picked up by the Germans. And a day or two after that, the suitcase disappeared, and that was actually the last time I ever saw my father. My mother saw him, and my sister saw him, but I was deemed to be not reliable enough to see him and tell other people about it.
Mm-hmm.
He went into hiding, and somewhere in The Hague or Rotterdam, I think, and my sister was there also. My sister was picked up. She was recognized as a Jewish girl by the Dutch pro-German people, And the man that she was in hiding with knew where my father was and told everything to the Germans. And so my father was then picked up. And he was standing on a train to Germany thinking, thank goodness the kids are safe, when he suddenly saw my sister in the same compartment.
Mm-hmm.
And I was so well hidden that it took him a while after the war to find out where I was. I was hidden by a most magnificent family for the last year of the war, a family that I always have had contact with. The couple have long since been deceased, but their children have all been visiting me here in Baltimore, and their grandchildren I still have contact with. As a matter of fact, there's a 13-year-old who translated my book from English into Dutch and wrote a paper for his history class on it, and he sent me a copy of that. I was extremely impressed. And the last time I was in Holland, I met him and took him and his mom out for lunch.
That is an amazing aspect of the ongoing story of your experiences. Now, your mother was a big reader. She loved to read stories to you, and you were an avid listener. But again, you always went back and you'd say, Mom, how come none of these characters ever have to go to the bathroom? Because that was something you always had a challenge with, no matter where you were.
And my mother was also a violinist. She was teaching teaching very well-known people. The concertmaster of the Concertgebouw Orchestra of Amsterdam was one of her students, and I remember vividly the day that they were playing on the radio one of the Bach double concertos, and we were all sitting at home listening to the music, and she was sitting there with a broad smile on her face. Mm-hmm. Was very proud that her students were doing so well. But she had a very, very difficult time because she developed cancer unrecognized for a long time. They thought she had sciatica in her leg, but it turned out she already had breast tumor going to her leg. Mm-hmm. And she lived for another year and a half without a whole lot of medical care, in hiding, until she finally passed away during the war.
And she really didn't let on to you at all that she was in this kind of a situation. But one of the things that I found intriguing is that someone one day said to you, and again, you're 5 years old, that you were Jewish. You didn't have a clue about being Jewish. I mean, there was nothing in your young mind that had any special label that was stamped on it.
That
quite an experience
true.
For you.
That is true, because we were not religious at all. The only Jewish thing we did was Friday night, we'd have a nice meal. And
mm-hmm.
that was really the only thing. We never went to a synagogue or anything like that. And it was only when the Germans picked up our neighbors across the street, because they were apparently found in the street not wearing their star, that my sister and I were looking behind the curtains of the front window, and I said to my sister, why are they being picked up? And she said, because they are Jewish. And I said to her, well, thank goodness we are not. And she said to me, yes, we are. And so I ran upstairs where my mom was in bed, and I said, is it true? And she says, yes, my son, it's true. And that's how I learned that I was Jewish.
Winifred was a very special lady in your family's life.
She still is, unfortunately. Unfortunately, my sister Winifred is now in a Orthodox Jewish home for Alzheimer's people in Amsterdam.
Mm-hmm.
I was just talking to her husband this morning. She's not doing very well.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that. Winifred really was very, very protective of you, naturally, being older.
Yeah.
And she also was very much aware of what was happening with, you know, your mom. And, of course, all this was to be kept from you because you were so little.
Yes.
Tell us about the experience of the German soldiers wanting to come in and just take over the house. I mean, if we think about that today, someone coming down the street in a car, walking up to the house, demanding we open up the door and saying, I want your house, and you are supposed to leave it. That must have been absolutely horrific for your family.
It was indeed. It was a very traumatic affair. And as I wrote in my book, there were many years after that where I wondered whatever happened to my toys that were in the house, because, of course, we couldn't take anything with us. But after the war, I've visited the house, actually. I've been inside. And that big house that we lived in is turned out to be a very, very rather modest row house in Arnhem. Mm-hmm. You know, how kids always think that things are so big.
Mm-hmm. That's true, because you're little. You're little.
Yeah, of course.
But it's amazing that it's still standing and that you were able to go back and to visit the original.
Yes, I rang the doorbell. It was an office building now. It was an office building. I don't remember what. It was the city of Arnhem, I think, that had something there. But they let me walk through the house and see what was there. Of course, it was completely redone and refurbished and rebuilt so that it was not anything to live in. It was really now an office. But it was very interesting. I also went back to that children's house where I was in hiding for a year.
Mm-hmm.
And that huge driveway from the gate to the house turned out to be no more than maybe 10 feet or 12 feet long.
Mm-hmm. But it made a difference to you as a little boy.
Now, Trudy
was your family's maid. And
yes.
That
yes.
was the person that you ended up being put into the custody of.
The first place in hiding was with Trudy.
Mm-hmm.
But that was only for maybe a month. After Trudy, I went to stay with the parents of another one of our former maidservants.
Mm-hmm.
She wasn't there, but the parents were there. They had a fruit farm, and I spent a couple of months during the summer there, watching them harvest the fruit, all the fresh plums and all that stuff, and I was allowed to eat anything I wanted. And I think I mentioned in the book how at night I have terrible cramps and I had to go away to the bathroom, and there was no bathroom but an outhouse, which was also a new experience for me.
There were so many experiences. And one of them was carpenters that fixed an attic so that there were doors in a large wall that went from floor to roof. Now, this is something many people tried to do to be able to give shelter to those that otherwise were going to be sent to the concentration camps, and especially with children. Tell us about this particular environment you were in.
Well, I was kind of happy to be there. It was way up under the roof, and there was a little window which looked out over the beautiful surroundings. It was a very nice place. I slept well. I had one roommate, a boy a few years older than I was, and considering the wild scene in the children's home, which was a home for children with asthma and eating disorders originally, it was kind of a nice place to stay at night until, of course, they started to have all of the other Jewish kids come up, climb up the ladder and close to the wall behind us when there was a raid. And then things, of course, came to an end.
Yes, they did. In fact, those people that ran the facility, they were taken off by the Gestapo, if I remember.
They were indeed, yes. And we moved out the very next day. Somebody came to pick me up on the back of his bicycle. I had never been out in the middle of the night, total darkness outside. It was quite an interesting 20-minute ride, and he dumped me off at some other family where I stayed for one night. They were scared to death to have me, as a matter of fact.
Mm-hmm.
And that happened a couple more times, and then I was picked up by this wonderful man who took me home across the country to his family. Man, he worked for the underground. He was about 20, 21 years old. And he was an amazing guy. You know, he would have been shot if he had been stopped with me.
Mm-hmm.
And as I mentioned in the book, we were in the train, and suddenly some German soldiers came and sat in the compartment with us. And I didn't know where to turn. And he put his hand on my knee and looked at me and kind of made me quiet down, and they didn't pay any attention to me, too. They were busy smoking and reading German newspapers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But that man just died a year ago, and I saw him about a month before I died, and I had the opportunity to tell him how much I appreciated everything he had done for me. We had a beautiful ending, really. And I have always been very close to his family. I would have flown out to his funeral if it weren't for the fact I just had a detached retina that was repaired and I wasn't allowed to fly.
Mm-hmm.
But I must tell you, I was very, very sad. Wonderful
well,
man.
He was a member of the Dutch underground. And
yes, he was.
This was something that, you know, they dramatized in Hollywood movies and have for years, but people have no idea how many people lost their lives by going underground and fighting against the adversary of
that's very
hate
true. That's
and
very true.
Poisonous things and destruction and everything that was just rolling forward, not just in Holland, but throughout Europe. It was a hideous
Absolutely.
Situation. And
yes.
there
members
were so
of the underground
life.
who mm-hmm. were discovered were shot summarily. They were not tried or anything like that.
Oh, no. They killed them immediately because that was
yeah.
just the way it was.
Yeah.
But they all knew that that was the reality of being involved. But you had to play the part of being a nephew and a member of a Christian family, and your family
right.
hadn't been religious at all. So this was really quite an adjustment for you. And there were a lot of things that you had to learn when being with the family. And it was...
I don't hesitate to tell you that the Sundays were infinite for me. We had long church services in the morning and in the evening. We went twice every Sunday. And I wasn't allowed to do anything. I wasn't allowed to go outside, play, do anything. I was allowed to read. The only positive side was where the Sunday meals were as best as they could be, considering the fact that the meals were nothing to write home about towards the end of the war when we had nothing to eat.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But Mrs. Van Wijnen, my hostess, she always managed to get something on the table, even if it's just a little bouillon block that she would put over the potatoes to give them a little taste and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful.
That's something that many times I reflect because of the many interviews I've done through the years of people going through what they went through, no sugar, no salt, the aspect of even being able to get flour to make bread.
Oh, absolutely.
Potatoes.
Not to speak of getting clothes. I was a growing kid, and there was nothing to be bought, of course, for me to wear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and eggs, anything like this, it was just amazing. Now, you had a situation when you were in the school where the Germans really were seemingly everywhere, and they had come into the school, and they were all over the playground, the school that you
yeah,
were attending.
Yeah, they just took the school. And we were sitting there in class when suddenly the Germans marched in and took the school.
Mm-hmm.
And the officers stayed at our house. And my host and hostess, they looked at each other and said, what are we going to do with Robbie? And they didn't know. So they just said, let him stay around, but let's keep him out of sight.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to go to bed very early. I didn't complain. I realized why. And there was one episode where the German officers, who really liked to talk a lot, they stood around in the hallway and they said in German, which I did not understand, thank goodness, they said in German to my host, the Jews are the fault of everything. Isn't it true, little boy? As they patted me on the head. And my hostess blanched. And I just walked by and smiled because I didn't know what they were talking about. Thank goodness.
Now, when you were 10 years old, you had to say goodbye to this family.
Yes.
And you went where?
I went to live with a family, a colleague of one of my aunts in the east of Holland. My aunt was a school teacher, and so was he. And we lived with them for a few months. And then I moved to a different foster family, a Jewish foster family. And that was nice, except that they were kind of religious, and they wanted me to go to synagogue with them on Saturdays and all that, and I didn't really want to do that, so they gave me a choice. Either I had to go to synagogue with them, or I would have to leave. So I decided to leave. And then
what
I went
to, did you do?
Then I went to visit. Then I went to live with a sister of my mother in Amsterdam, who was, pardon my word, a real bitch. And
well, that's describing it I think softly, because she was a humdinger. I mean, this
was a humdinger,
amazing.
And to my surprise, her son, who is a retired radiologist, read my book, and he was not offended by the way I described his mother. He said to me, he said, you know, my mother couldn't stand you, and she was a difficult woman. That is what he said, and I was very, very impressed by him for that.
Now you
but she was very protective of her children, and she was afraid that because I wasn't done, that I would be competing with her children in school and things like that.
Well, she had some other issues, too, that you bring out in the book, which makes for fascinating reading. But you lost your foot in an accident. Tell us how that happened.
Yeah, I lost half a leg in an accident, yeah.
Well, half a leg, not just your foot, half your leg, okay.
Right. Yeah, I did that, because I wasn't allowed to take the streetcar to school. I had to walk all the way. And so an hour then I would hitch a ride on the streetcar until the conductor came to collect the tickets. And one day he came to collect the tickets, and I jumped off, and I got caught under the wheel of the streetcar.
Oh, my goodness.
And that landed me in the hospital for 6 weeks. But I had a doctor who really was very good. He said to me, he said, son, he said, if you burn your rear end, you have to sit on top of the blister, so don't feel sorry for yourself. And I've taken that advice, and I have never looked back, and I've always made the best of that.
Well, that's definitely obvious by the way that you have built your life. You are just so definitive with so much of the detail. I find it fascinating. You go into your experiences with the opposite sex, finding out about your own sexuality, things that most of the time people would not even mention in their experiences, but you were every inch a boy that had a zest for life, and you had a lot of people that put their lives on the line. You're right. This is a historical book. It's very, very informative. What is your website where if people want to find out more about you and your story, where would they go?
Oh, it's called RuxtonWriter.com. Ruxton is spelled R-U-X-T-O-N. And it's Ruxton Writer, you know, as you write books, .com.
Wonderful. Now, if you could leave a message with my audience, what would you want to say to them regarding this story, this real story of your childhood in the Second World War?
Well, my glass is always half full. That is number one. And number two, when it's your time, it's going to be your time. I don't think you are aware of the fact that I almost was blown up last Christmas Day. I was on that flight from Amsterdam to Detroit where the underwear bomber was.
Oh, for heaven's sake, no.
I was on that flight. And so there must be some higher power that is protecting me for a while yet.
My goodness, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Wow. No, I'm glad you shared that with us. But your thoughts
And I don't hesitate to tell you that when I came home, the first thing I did was I opened up my suitcase and I took out a bottle of Dutch gin and we had a good drink.
And you can tell that he has
that
a wonderful sense of humor.
At the end of my Christmas party.
At the end of your Christmas. Oh, yes, yes. Absolutely celebrating.
Yeah.
Well, you've had a life that has taken you from an environment where you were loved and protected by a wonderful family, had to go through the experience of war, crossed paths with a number of different people, good, bad, and indifferent, coming to the United States, eventually deciding you were going to go into medicine and living a life of purpose and service to others. Do you feel that this experience that you recall when you were writing it as going through this memory journey of yours, how did that affect you in your
awareness?
Actually,
it was kind of a catharsis because in the earlier years I had more difficulty talking about it, but now I don't.
And
I'm a very happy man. I have a very nice circle of friends. I have two wonderful children and grandchildren, so I have absolutely nothing to complain about.
Well, I think it's just wonderful that we've been able to share this time with you on the air. The book is How Warm It Was and How Far. My guest has been Dr. Robert Kahn. And go to his website, RuxtonWriter.com, RuxtonWriter. And for those of you that are teachers, or if you have youngsters in your family, this is his true story about his childhood and growing into the teen years that I think even youngsters would be interested in, because it's about a world and life I would not wish anyone to see, but it did happen, and sometimes it's good to share those stories. Dr. Kahn, thank you so much for being my guest today.
It was my pleasure. Thank you very much for talking to me.
Delightful to do so. Bye-bye. This is Donna Sebo. We are taking a break. We'll be back in just a moment. Don't go away.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604 or outside of Pierce County, 800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna. Happy Monday to all of you, and if you'd like to give me a call, here is the toll-free telephone number, 888-815-9756. Now, that's worldwide, and you will be able to call in and chat with me. I'd be delighted to light up your life instantaneously, if I can. Give me a call again at 888-815-9756. All I need from you is your first name or your initial. And then after that, just relax, let me tell you what I perceive, and then you're welcome to ask me a question about anything that you like. Quickly, I want to remind those of you who tune into the show that I am seeking out stories of the paranormal. Any personal experience that you've had, I would very much enjoy having you write it out and sending it to me via email. I'm putting a file together, the cutoff for this accumulation of stories. I'm aiming for 100, and I'd love to have yours. So if you will send it to Donna at DelphiInternational.com, Donna at DelphiInternational.com, I'll add it to the pile, and we're going to be starting to put that book together next year. But I would love to have that story from you. So whether it's a ghost story, if it has something to do with coincidence, a dream that has come through, an out-of-body experience, whatever it might be. I think the more we can share our stories about real experience, the less fear other people will have. That's a wonderful thing about putting information in books and talking about experiences on the air. Also, I know the holidays are zipping up so fast, aren't they? I was talking with someone this morning, a young lady at a business office, and she was saying, I can't believe it. My neighbor has already started putting up Christmas decorations. And I went over and I visited with her. I said, couldn't you wait a couple of weeks and do it after Thanksgiving? But this person just absolutely apparently has a passion for the Christmas holiday. So this individual is getting her stuff going and getting it started. And when I was out walking my little Scotty Victor this morning, I noticed some of our neighbors were doing the same thing. And I'm going, holy Moses, it's going to be here before we know it. Well, I thought I would start letting you know, for those of you who are listening in Washington, in Western Washington, on December the 11th, I will be appearing at the King's Bookstore in downtown Tacoma from 11 until 4. And we are raising money for certain charities. I will be doing many readings for people on that day, and I invite you to join me. And all you have to do is go into my website. You'll find out all the details about the address, the location, the times, and you can also check out DickensFestival.com for Western Washington. But that's coming up on December the 11th. All right. Give me a buzz if you want to chat. 888-815-9756. Now, these are the guests that are coming up this week. Tomorrow, have your pads of paper handy and your pens, because we're going to be talking turkey. Leo Pearlstein has been a regular with me for years with my radio show because he talks turkey. We're going to be talking about dressing, wonderful recipes, new things that he's discovered, and we're going to be sharing it with you. So we're going to have all kinds of good things to enable you to perhaps surprise. If you're cooking turkey and you are preparing for the holiday, we might want to do something different. So we'll give you some ideas there. Then we're going to be talking with Karen Lowry. This is a mother that had a special needs child. Her book, Seventh Inning, we will be talking about that. And then we will be talking on Thursday with Emptying the Nest. How many people, when their kids are supposedly ready to get up and get out, they're not ready for it, and they don't go anywhere, and you still have them at home. Well, there comes a time when you do have to empty that nest, and Brad Sachs is going to be sharing that with us. Friday, Ryan Van Cleve is going to be my guest. We're going to be talking about video game addiction. This was such an eye-opener for me. I had no clue that this is a serious addiction for a lot of people. Interesting people here we're going to have this week, and wonderful guests. I know we've got a caller on the line, but don't be afraid to tell your friends about the various subject matters we talk about. And remember, always, we do have those archives that you will be able, if you miss the show, you can go in and you can listen to those archives at your convenience. Let's go to our caller for the day. First caller, welcome to the show. First name or initial, and where are you calling from?
Hi, this is Taylor, and I'm calling from San Diego.
Hi, Taylor. Well, the sun must be shining for you down in San Diego, California.
Oh, it's beautiful, yeah, especially compared to where I know everything else is happening.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm going to envy you. I'm going to say I'm jealous, because up here in the Pacific Northwest, we've got rain, we've got storm fronts coming through. Of course, that's what happens this time of the year, but I'll grumble anyway.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, don't be sorry. It's just what happens here. And you just have to become part duck. If you live here long enough,
yeah,
you get webbed feet, and you just learn how to deal with it. Let's get down to business with you, Taylor. First thing that I am aware of with you is that you have had a great deal on your emotional plate. You finally have been able to do what I call a cleaning away of some of the emotional, for the lack of a better word, debris that you have carried within yourself, and you're feeling so good about it. Yet there is, for whatever reason, an attraction of people to you where they will use you as a dumping ground for their emotional stuff, and you don't need it. What I'd like for you to do is to develop an understanding that you must learn how to detach. You're an excellent listener. You really are. You really do listen thoughtfully and carefully to people. But you soak it up like a sponge, and you need to not do that. This isn't yours to carry. It isn't yours. You need to empathize, not sympathize. And this is a discipline that you must learn. And I would just like for you, if you feel that your emotional tank of absorption is getting too full and then some, write out your concerns and your feelings and all of what you're feeling emotionally on a piece of paper and then burn it. And allow that visualization of the paper burning. It's releasing it. You don't need to carry it anymore. You release it to the universe. That sounds a little melodramatic. But you actually are so sympathetic with people. You can watch something on television, and it's just right in there with you. I mean, this is how you are.
Mm-hmm.
So since you have healing capabilities, you need to be able to detach so that you're not, for the lack of a better description again, sucked dry emotionally.
Yeah.
Where you are just like brittle paper, and you don't want that. You don't want to feel like you can just be picked up and crumbled. This is not good. So it's a discipline you need to learn, dear. And it's something that'll take some practice. And one of the things I'd like to encourage you to do is a visualization. Visualize like a spiral of energy just around you that goes from the tip of your toes to the top of your head, and it's just always circling you. And it is harmonic with whatever environment you're in. But when you are in an environment where you could be literally, emotionally, and psychically sucked dry, that spiral of energy just is flowing around you. It's a simple visualization, but it enables a detachment discipline to be developed. You're just a lovely person, and I just don't think you need to be the garbage dump for everybody else's junk. Do you have a question for me?
Well, first off, that was pretty dead on, except I'm not aware that I am taking on other people's stuff, although it does seem like lately, I don't know, people seem to be having, like, dramatic moments with me, and I get confused as to why that's happening. I'm like, I'm not even involved in what you're talking about, but you're getting mad at me. But so I will try and stay a little bit more detached.
Don't take it personally, because what's happening is that they feel safe with you. When they're discussing things, they're feeling safe. So they are emoting. They are just dumping their garbage out there.
Yeah.
And you're going, wait a minute, I'm getting pummeled. And it's not you.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm talking about, just absorbing things. When you start to think that this is personal, that's when you're soaking it up. And
after they
dump, all you need to do is say, wow, you really are hurting, aren't you? What do you think you can do about it? You know, just turn it back over
that's
to them. But don't take it personally, dear, because they are feeling safe with you. That is very important for you to understand. And if all of a sudden they have a tantrum and they go, you just don't get it. It's like a super-duper PMS attack, and then their voice is raised, and they're, you know, it doesn't make any difference whether it's male or female. Just look at them and in your mind say, it's okay, you're safe. I'm willing to listen.
Got you.
And then you look at them and just say, how do you think you should handle this? So in other words, you're gently giving it back to them. You're honoring and respecting their confidence, but you don't take it in.
Got it. I'm going to write that down. But I am calling about a specific thing, if you don't mind.
Not at all.
I wanted to know if you can see anything work-wise coming my way, because I've been interviewing a lot, and I'm really hoping that something pans out, even if it's not one of the jobs I've interviewed for.
What kind of work are you interested in, dear?
I work in TV and film.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I write. Sometimes I act as well.
Okay. So you're wanting to be in the environment of media.
Yes.
All right. Now what I'm going to do, I'm going to ask you to wait a moment because we're going to just take a real quick break. We'll come back and talk to Taylor, and I'll even chat with you if you like. 888-815-9756. We'll be right back.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay only $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 1-800-872-8852. That's 1-800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Gedrose. Buy it today. 1-800-872-8852.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604 or outside of Pierce County, 800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna. We're on the line with Taylor out of San Diego, California. Taylor, are you still with me?
Yes, I am.
Wonderful. Now, you have asked me about getting a job that is going to be associated with the field that you love so much. Now, I have to tell you, I am seeing some piecemeal work that is evolving, but it's not going to come into place yet. I would encourage you to consider commuting if this is something you're open to. And I believe that there is an opportunity for you through someone that you have known. So you need to go through your own directory of people that you know that have had associations in the industry. And I would say look for a positioning that's going to enable you to learn new software applications relative to media. And you will be in at what I'd call a lower grade, but someone would say, it's like I'm hearing a conversation and saying, oh, great, this person has some background. I'd love to have this individual. But are they aware they're going to have to learn how to do this, this, and this? Because we no longer do things X, Y, Z. So get out your former contacts or association lists that you've had with people in media, pick up the phone, and just let them know that you're ready and available for work. And something is evolving in positioning. It's not going to happen in a week, though.
Got you. I guess
but make your calls now. This is a good time during the holiday season.
Oh, good. Okay.
Don't wait until
I'm
after the first
that.
Of the year. Do it now.
No, I want it now.
Well, you may want it now, but the time is to make your calls now. Don't wait until January. Do it now.
Got you.
Thank you, Taylor, for your call.
Thank you, too, Donna. Thank you.
And have a wonderful holiday season this year.
Oh, you too. Thank you.
Bye-bye. We're going to go to our next caller, and if you'd like to call in, 888-815-9756 is the number. I wanted to let some of you know that are out there looking for jobs. I had quite a conversation with an individual who has been seeking people to go to work for them. And they said so many people have the wrong idea about looking for work. They think that the holiday season is not a good season to be involved in putting out applications because people are going to be so busy with the festivities of the coming holidays. But that's not true. You're going to find that there's a lot of opportunity to be able to do some work that is needed because the holiday season is a busy one. And whatever it is that you want to do to fill your time if you're out looking for work right now. But if you're looking for something in special arenas, put yourself out there and make your applications available now. And don't get discouraged. Please put it there. I know we often hear percentages of 10-12%, and I have heard this frequently from many different areas of the country, people that are living in different areas of the country. But that means there's anywhere from 85% to up to 90% of gainful employment that is there. A lot of things are changing. And one of the biggest changes is in technology. And so many times it happens so quickly in our world today that you really need to find a link with an environment that can help you keep up to par. I am absolutely blown away with the way that things are upgraded so fast. I had a meeting with someone last week and they were talking about all kinds of technology. I understood it, but I said, oh my goodness, to go and apply this and to be able to understand how to utilize it. I feel like sometimes I'm back in the cave days. Of course, I'm not, but I feel like it. It just happens that quickly. So develop an environment, a supportive environment that enables you to keep up to par with whatever changes that you find you may need to keep up with. And don't be afraid to volunteer. Don't be afraid to volunteer. And also to go into temp work. Because I've known of a number of people that ended up working as a temporary, and because they did such a good job, eventually they ended up with a full-time job. And it went on for a number of years. So understand you've got a lot of options. And one thing to remember, when you do volunteer work, when people understand your commitment, and you don't have to do it 5 days a week, if you have the time and you want to, that's wonderful, but most of us don't. So if you're going to do volunteer work, be discriminating about volunteer work. If you want to do something like our previous caller in media, volunteer at a cable station or at a radio station or in an environment where they would just love to have you be there. If you want to get into medicine, if you are going to school and are developing certain skills, volunteer for a small business. Say, I'll come in and I'll work for nothing if you are willing. I'll help you out if you're willing to help me out. And I'll tell you what, it's sort of a barter effect. But it does make a difference. And more people are catching on to this, and they're finding that they're linking with individuals that recognize their willingness, their earnestness, their dedication to doing a good job. And you never know who knows who. Word of mouth is quite effective. So just keep in mind, yes, we are going through some tough times. We've been in tough times before, but when we pull together, and we're supportive, and we're willing not just to sit back and watch television all day long, but to be out there and be involved in some way or another. There's someone that's going to want you, your talents, and your ability. And if you can get education along with it, what a win-win. Then you'll be ready to go. This is Donna Sebo, and I know we're getting close to being out of time, so I won't be able to take any more callers. But I do want to remind you, tomorrow we are going to be talking food. And I just love this because there are so many innovative ways that we can prepare things. But if you're like me and you think, holy Joseph, I can't get any busier. I can't do any more. I've got to find recipes that are going to be delightful to look at, delicious to taste, and easy to prepare, even with the holiday. I totally empathize with you, and Leo will too, so he's going to be my guest tomorrow. Remember always that you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul, and don't ever, ever believe that the universe doesn't have something special for you to be able to experience and enjoy. You are here for a purpose. You're here for a reason, and your reason is unique to you. And the journey of life is going to take you through many different twists and turns. Think of the gentleman that I had on earlier in the hour. He ended up becoming an orthopedic surgeon. He survived a war of hell. He has a wonderful story that he shared. Remember, we all have our journeys. Don't be afraid to share your story. But remember, there is that rainbow in your life at all times, in all places. This is Donna Sebo. We'll be back with you tomorrow. Same time, same place. Keep that pad of paper and pen handy. We'll be right here waiting for you. Donna Sebo, bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.